Maria is an entrepreneur, everyone, and we met in Mallorca last year, which on a boat trip, and we're just going to talk about what she's up to, how she's getting on, and talk about Panic Panties. So what is Panic Panties? I've got loads of questions, but you give a little introduction of what is.
I'm sure. Yeah, the name always sparks a lot of questions. So Panic Panties
it's a great
are
name.
Premium, individually wrapped, pre-washed underwear, so you can put them on your body right away. Sold in convenient places for women on the go. So we're talking convenience stores, airports, hotels, hospitals, places where women really need a fresh pair of panties in a pinch. And so we're providing them with a better, discreet, easy to find solution.
Yeah, that's brilliant. And how long have you, when did you start the company? How old is it? Because I did do an Instagram stalk and I went as far back as I could to see if I could get some on Panic Panties. Has it been a couple of years? A few years?
Yeah, it's been a bit, but it's been such a process. So we came up with the idea, I think in like 2018, and I own it with my two best friends. So it's really, really cool creating a business and with, you know, your besties that are pretty much like sisters.
Yeah.
And so we came up with the idea when we were out one night in New York and we were like slamming margaritas. And that day, like all three of us had an instance where we were frustrated by the on-the-go underwear options out there. So in the US, you know, you have like a CVS, Duane Reade, Walgreens. We were living in Manhattan at that time. So that's where you go for all of like your essentials at any time of the day or night. And they only have the Hanes and Fruit of the Loom granny panties. So they're not cute. We would never wear them. And so we found ourselves like in these moments where we were super frustrated by the options out there. And so we just decided to create our own. So there was so much time from, you know, that original night where we came up with the idea to then creating the LLC, figuring out what the name was going to be. And then we, you know, had this whole journey of how do you create an underwear company? Like we had no idea. We had no fashion experience. I was a journalism major and was working in, you know, in editorial most of my career. Alex was a CPA. So she numbers girly. And then Catherine Ann was like marketing and branded partnerships. So none of us had any experience really like starting an underwear business. So it took time to find a manufacturer, to create the brand, all of that. So this is my long-winded way of saying our real launch was January of 2020. That was when we found like an actual sustainable manufacturing partner and had our first big batch of inventory shipped to the US. I was always trying to like create businesses. Like I had an art gallery when I was like seven called like K&M Co, where I'd put it like I didn't even have talent. I was just like, oh, I can do this. And then I invented like this backpack that turns into a sweatshirt because I was always cold. And I was selling seashells wherever I could. I'd like paint them and try and sell them to all my parents' friends. It was like, you know, little things, but I was always trying to find a way to create. And then, you know, I don't know why I didn't pursue it in college. Everybody always told me I was a great writer. Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, like I would love to work at a magazine, you know, that would be cool. And so that's what I did. That was my career. But quickly realized that you don't make very much money working at a magazine and it's very hard to move up in those kinds of jobs. So that was kind of what started my entrepreneurial itch again. I was like, there's got to be something that I can create on my own. And Alex, one of our co-founders, actually, the two of us started a kickboxing company in Manhattan when we were like 24. And so we were still working full time. I was working in advertising at that point. And we would be running from like work to like our studio to set up and like host the classes. I'd be taking customer service calls like during the day at work, under my desk, like trying not to let anybody hear me. So that was like our first like dabble, but we were so young and it was just like, you know, kind of like after work hours. And we needed a lot of money to scale in New York. So we ultimately closed it down. And Panic Panties, the idea came along like a few years later. So we were ready for it. We were looking for something, but we just wanted it to be something meaningful, not just to create a business, just to create one.
Yeah, something that was you believed in and had a lot of relevance to you. Yeah, fair enough. So do you find that a lot of entrepreneurs that you meet have, because I've watched a load of podcasts with entrepreneurs and they all say, oh yeah, I was selling lemonade by age like five. And do you find that a lot, or do you think, do you meet people that just go, I'm going to become an entrepreneur? Have you met many other entrepreneurs? Have you been to like event? Do you,
oh yeah,
is networking, like, is that important? Yeah. Is that relevant? It must
so
be.
Important.
Of course it is.
So important. Like, honestly, that's the most important part about starting your own business is,
okay,
it's like a puzzle. Like, I just always say, take a call, like take the call, keep connections, like to the best of your ability. Obviously we all have like so much time in the day and it's really hard to keep in touch with people, but I just believe in forming meaningful connections and helping people when you can. And you, cause you really, it's all about like finding the right factory for us, finding a graphic designer, finding a technical designer to help us design the panties. Like all of this came from like connections that we made or previous people that we knew. And we would be nowhere without it. So that's like number one, definitely. And I would say out of the three of us, I am the networker. I'm always trying to like go to startup events and create like a community. Being an entrepreneur can also be like pretty lonely, because you're probably like a little certifiably insane. So it's nice to surround yourself with other people that are kind of have the same struggles. But to your question, yeah, I'd say that there's probably like two classes of people that I see. Like one, you know, to your point, like it's the people that have been selling whatever they can from whatever age they could. And they just are born with that desire to create. And then I think there's people that maybe weren't, but they found a problem that they're so passionate about, like, especially in, I feel like the health community, like maybe they had an illness that really had them like create something. So I think there's those two classes, but I really do, being an entrepreneur is so hard. It's so hard that you really have to have such a love of either that life path or what you're creating or both.
Yeah. Cause it's just problems, isn't it? That's effectively what you're just putting out fires nonstop almost. That's like, because problems are just, they're just like a universal in anything. And that's, you encounter problems and you fix one problem and then you create another problem and you're like, well, how has that worked? What's happened here? And you've got to manage managing all these different things. And then you've got to manage people as well, which I think how many employees do you have at the moment, or what's the like structure of that?
Yeah. So we're still very lean, because we're self-funded at this point. Cash flow is so important for our inventory and for our retail partnerships, which are actually very expensive. Oh, we could get into this, but you think getting into one big store will change your life. But it's not always what you'd imagine it to be. There's a much longer road and a lot of expenses that businesses incur these days, especially CPG, which is consumer packaged goods, which is what we're considered.
Do you ever get imposter syndrome?
All the time. I think that I am a struggling, trying to be recovering perfectionist, but I just always feel like I could be doing better, or I could be doing more, or I could be, you know, sometimes it's hard to take a step back and to look and be like, this is where I want to be, but like, look at where we are. You know, it's so important to do that, because I think that I personally like beat myself more than even imposter syndrome. I think I'm just like, oh, I want to be so much farther. Like I want this to be, so much bigger at this point. And I think, hard on myself, and I'm sure my co-founders feel the same way in a lot of ways. So I think I've been working on that, and also like, just I had a hard time in around January. We had done like a really big Kickstarter. We were working on the new line, trying to get it done. We were in manufacturing the new line, and it was around Christmas, and I was just like, not sleep. Like I worked all Christmas Eve, you know, like I didn't take any time off. And I was just, I love what I do so much that it's so easy to keep doing it, but I wasn't giving myself breaks. And so I really kind of like burnt out in January. I had a tough time. I had to take like a week off of work, and I was just like, mental health wise was not what I needed to be doing. And I think this is important for entrepreneurs to talk about, because, you know, we just see the shiny things. We don't see like the meltdowns on the other side. And so post January, I've made it like a promise to myself to take more time off, to really, you know, try and have a weekend, like don't work all weekend, like to try and get out and experience things and find joy in little things and treat myself to little things. And even if I really want to be working, because I'm excited about what we're working on, like, no, computer shut, go out, get some sun, have some fun, think about other things. Like, it's not that serious. At the end of the day, it's a job, it's a business, it's not your health, it's not your family, you know? So really, I think that that's, sorry, I kind of went on a tangent, but, and then also just taking time to be proud and reflect and be like, wow, I crushed that, or I did a great job, or like just, you know, being proud of where you are in the moment.
Absolutely. That's so important. It's like, if this is a weird sort of comparison, but imagine you make a film and it's like cost hundreds of millions of pounds and all this work goes into it. And then it gets, do you know what IMDb is?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it gets reduced to like a number on IMDb and it's like 6.7 out of 10. And it's like, that took months and months and months. And I think that's one of doing something creative is, mm-hmm. It can be reduced. Other people reduce it, and it can be reduced so easily. And you've put so much effort in, and you love it. And it doesn't mean it's not worthwhile. It's sort of built into the rule book of doing something creative is that someone else can look at it and go, to them, it's not what it is to you, and that can be hard to sort of get your head around and go, this is so much to me, but they just see it as, you know, like they see anything in the street, and that can, I imagine, you know, in January when it's all dark, and when it must be really hard, and you must have to motivate yourself to keep going when things are getting.
For sure. And I feel like when that whole, I refer to it, it's funny, it's like January, like what happened to Jan.
Yeah.
It was really just like my breaking point of like being like, I need a better work-life balance, which I feel like a lot of entrepreneurs probably struggle with, especially when you love what you do, because it's like, yeah, I would love to like, and I'm an introvert. So like, I would rather stay in and do work and do something creative or work on our Instagram or something like, you know, kind of like fun, but it's still about work. And like, no, you need to like, you need to separate who you are as a person from this business. Like, it can't be so intertwined all the time. Like, my identity and my like purpose is greater than just being a business owner. And I think that's something that I'm constantly working on. But the creativity, what you're saying is like, you know, people's opinions and judgments, 1,000%. It's so personal. Like, and I like that you're, you know, comparing it to like a movie or, you know, something like that where somebody's created and you're getting all these reviews. Like, we're sold on Urban Outfitters and,
wasn't even the reviews. It was just like, people just walk past it and like you would walk past anything in a shop. And it's because it's, as you said a minute ago, you've sort of, it would be very easy to tie your identity to it because it's a problem that is relevant to you. And it's like your baby. And I imagine it's sort of, it's firmly, you have to try and sort of hold on to it tightly, but also not tightly at the same time, because you need to hold on to it effectively so that you can get going and improving, which it is, but also not attach yourself to it at the same time.
Outfitters online there, and we've been top rated for both of our styles, and
perfect.
Like, you'll get somebody that'll write a review, right? And it's like, you know, I think they gave us 1 star for one of our styles, and they were like 2 high-rise, and that, you know, it's, you gotta like kind of like swallow it down, right? Because is that worth, for one person, it could be 2 high-rise. For somebody else, it could be 2 low-rise. It's just like, or somebody else, it's perfect and they love it. Does that deserve a 1-star review? Like, in my opinion, no. Like, maybe it's just like for you, but it's, or somebody that might be like, oh, I don't understand. Like, I don't have a need for this. Or like, I've never, some women like to go commando and like, they don't think of underwear in that way. Or like, they're not leaving their town or this, their neighborhood, or like they don't, you know, it's not, nothing is for everyone, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be for everyone, because if you're targeting absolutely everyone, you're like missing the opportunity of really catering to your specific demographic and the person that needs you and the person that's going to value you as a customer. So I think that you just can't take anything personally. Nothing is for everyone. And also, like, reviews are great because I love that feedback. Like, whether it's good, bad, ugly, whatever it is, like, it's just so valuable to have that feedback from a customer.
It is the concept is for a lot of people, though. It's like everything. Mm-hmm. There are a billion ideas out there that no one's ever thought of. But if you handed this thing to them that no one's invented, they go, yeah, this is great. Or maybe some of them would, but there's always, it's like minority and majority influence, isn't it? There's the people that, well, the minority of people that start off are the ones that are maybe slightly more creative in their way of thinking, and then they push, you know, they sort of, oh, that's interesting, something new, that's cool, I'll buy that. And then eventually it becomes, they tell their friend, and then they tell their friend, and then it sort of spreads. And then it gets to the point where it's no longer a minority, but it's a majority. And then the people that buy it, they don't feel as, they're not as isolated, if that, but they're not putting themselves out as much. You understand what I mean? Sort of the, because that's another of the problems about being an entrepreneur, I can imagine, is that humans are very risk averse. So we don't really want to do anything that is going to rock the boat, or you don't want to put ourselves out there. And you know, you think, I've got a brilliant idea, which is a brilliant idea, obviously. And you think, that's it. Brilliant idea. Marketing's great. But also a lot of it is getting people to feel confident enough to take a risk. It sounds ridiculous, take a risk, but it kind of is for a person that's, you know, it's an unknown. You know, it's not like you've created a new chocolate bar and everyone's like, oh, I wonder what that tastes like. No, yeah. It's a new.
Yeah. So much of what we do is kind of like making people feel confident in taking the risk. And so, you know, whether it be from the consumer, right? Like, they're spending their hard earned money on, on this pair of underwear that they may, or, you know, as any emerging brand, they may be seeing for the first time, or, you know, you're making decisions all the time as a consumer and as a person. So, you know, the packaging, the marketing, the branding, it all has to be there to like make them feel more comfortable making this decision, taking this risk, even though it's like, exactly, you know, small scale, and we're filling a need that they don't currently have. So it's easy for them to make that decision. But more importantly, buyers. So 95% of our business is wholesale. So that's, you know, getting into retailers that would carry our product. We will be ramping up like our online D2C. But, you know, our mission is to first and foremost be sold when and where women need us most. So, So for the, you know, for the buyers of these retailers, it's a big deal when they're bringing in a new product. You know, it's absolutely, their careers that are on the line if something doesn't perform. So much of our job is to show these buyers why their customers need a better solution, why this is something that they're missing, why this is a huge opportunity for them, something that we call an incremental sale, which is when, you know, it's not going to cannibalize any of their other options that are out there. We're bringing underwear to either retailers that don't currently carry underwear, like airports, 1,000% they need women's underwear. How many times?
Yes,
I mean, airport. I also, yeah. What I love wow, so much about this brand, what I love so much about this brand is when we're talking to people in real life, like whether I'm going, you know, I'll go to our retailers and looking around to see what the customers are, how they're reacting to the product or trade shows or whatever. Everyone, like the majority of people, have these very intimate stories or embarrassing stories or whatever, frustrating stories. At times they've been like, why, you know, underwear is a wellness essential for women. There's so many reasons we need it. And they're just like, why is this not sold somewhere that is convenient for me, that's ready to wear, all of that? It's just such a miss. So, or they'll be like, you know, I got stranded at this airport. I had to wash my underwear in the sink. You would be shocked how many women have told us that they've washed underwear in the sink at an airport and had to hand dry it under the dryer. You know, it's so, I love that women get to be vulnerable and talk about something that is maybe, you know, could be a little bit embarrassing, but we're like, it's not embarrassing. It's life and it happens to all of us. So let's talk about it. Let's laugh about it together. So I don't know where I was going with that, but I so appreciate all of those stories. And so the risk in the consumer is so much less. And we find that women, when after they buy the underwear, like they'll buy them in a moment of panic or because they love the packaging or they thought it was interesting to keep in their bag or really smart, whatever, then they actually wear them and they're blown away by the quality because we didn't just want it to be an on-the-go solution. We wanted it to be something that you're going to be like, oh my God, I love these. I want to wear these every single day. And also it's like a safety net for me for whenever I need a spare pair in a pinch.
The opportunities are endless, really. You could, as you were talking, I was thinking you could like have dispensers. You could put them in a toilet because they have like a public toilet, a public restroom. You could, they could go in offices, like, they could, you know, schools for like, young girls. I mean, because it's such a, you know, it's not your target market as much as there'll be some people who you'd be more inclined to buy it. But, you know, every woman wears underwear and everyone, as you said, everyone will have an experience like that. And, you know, they stay a night somewhere and they're like, you know, I want to change or, you know, exactly. So it's all, very perfect. What about men?
So funny. Men are always asking one, what I think is so cool about our brand and our product is that I have never encountered another product that's made for women primarily, that men have like such strong, like interests and opinions about. Like, it's just funny. Like I have a lot of guy friends or I'm always networking and most of the, if it's like a tampon brand or an underwear brand, normally like guys don't really have anything to say about it. They're like, okay, you know, not my territory. I don't know if it's something about the name or the use case or the need that we're filling, but I've been in conversations for hours about guys, like with guys, like giving feedback or saying how cool it is, or like they try and understand why women would need it or just like general curiosity. And then they're always like, well, when do we get ours? And it's definitely on our radar. I think that we started with women because women have more use cases, but also you'd be shockingly enough, a lot of like rest stops on the highway have men's underwear, but not women's, which is so interesting. And, you know, it could be because of the number of, in some travel centers, like male truck drivers versus women on the road. But that number has actually increased. I think we have a stat by like 80% women truck drivers too. And that's like a very niche kind of segment, but there's better underwear options out there for men than there are for women on the go.
Yeah.
So we wanted to first and foremost cater to our need and the ladies. And you know, I think that men it's definitely on the horizon, but after we've really established.
Any aha moments? Do you know what I mean? Aha moments.
There's aha moments every day.
Every day. Good.
Nice. Aha moments. All the time, about anything specific?
Go.
I think there's so many categories of aha moments. There was mental health, which I've already talked about, and just like finding balance. There was a lot of obstacles actually being a woman in business, and which I don't know if I was naive to that. I just never thought of myself as like, and this, you know, kind of comes from like coming from like, you know, I guess a bit of privilege, of course. Like I never thought that like being a woman would hold me back in any way or would make things more challenging. I just was like, actually just think women are brilliant and incredible and so resilient. And I thought that it would do nothing but help. But we actually one of our first factories that we were working with was with a lot of men. All men owned the factory, and the lack of respect that we really encountered, and kind of we had quality control issues in terms of the fabric was amazing, but the fit of the garments, and this was like way early on, they were so inconsistent. Like, we have a spec that every panty is like to spec, mm-hmm. and you have a bit of tolerance. And this is with any garment, which we learned, you know, it has to be this measurement, but you have a little bit of wiggle room, either big or small, because nothing's going to be exactly on point when you're producing hundreds of thousands of garments. But this particular factory was way off. I mean, like, putting like a small waistband with a large body, like, it just was not even close to what we agreed on. And this was during COVID, and I had to fly to that factory twice during COVID, once around the holidays, once in the fall. I had a quarantine, couldn't be with my family. And it was just a quality control issue that they weren't taking accountability for. And, you know, I was happy to be there going through all the inventory on my own. But even after that, they, you know, mixed it all up. But we were having a talk with them afterwards, and we said, you know, I think this is a quality control issue. And they had the audacity to say to us, I think it's an expectations issue. And I can guarantee if there is a man in our seat, that would not be something that was said. And it was just like, you know, we're in our early 30s, but just with older men not taking us seriously enough. And so that was super frustrating. And then we were like, okay, well, we're not doing this. Like, we're going to find a better solution. And we found another factory that we're working with now that is wonderful, so respectful, wonderfully run, like, just love everything about it. And we're very lucky, but we had to make that decision, like, you know, to uproot your entire manufacturing is incredibly hard. It's such a long process. The training that goes into it, finding another factory that's reputable, that's sustainable, that is ethical, you know, like, all of that, there's just a lot, and it's not easy to find them. So that was like, you know, that was an aha moment. Like, we're not going to stand for this. We're not going to accept something that we're not proud of. Like, we're not just going to be okay with you guys, you know, missing the mark the majority of the time. And yeah, like, mm-hmm. quality matters so much to us. So that was something, aha moments. We were also in a pitch competition in the fall. It was with 500 women owned businesses. And I'm an introvert. I hate public speaking. I literally went into journalism because I didn't want to talk to anybody in person. I wanted to write. So I never in a million years thought that I could get on stage in a pitch competition. And we made it to the third round, which was in Washington, D.C. And it was 11 companies. And we were in front of hundreds of people and a panel of 11 corporate judges from like Target, like big name retailers. Yeah. And I had to get up there, no note cards, no presentation, me and the stage, and give a 3-minute pitch about Panic Panties and why we are about our innovation and then what we would use the money for. It was for $20,000. And we placed second out of these incredible women-owned businesses. We won $10,000, which was like really phenomenal. And these women, I mean, I can't even stress how incredible these companies are and these women are. I was shake. I mean, my heart rate on my way there on the plane 2 days before the pitch was 120. Just thinking about it, off the charts. Like, I was so nervous, but you just suck it up and you do what you have to do and you overcome fear. And like, the biggest thing, I mean, regardless of like the win and all of that, was just that I showed myself like, okay, this is so funny. This is something that you thought you would literally rather die than do. And you did it, and you did it better than you thought you would. So that's another aha moment, just like that self-belief and no obstacles. And you've got that, great. You find a way to overcome it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you've got that in your arsenal now. You can look back and go, I did that. And I think that's one of the things about overcoming a fear, and how every time, overcoming an obstacle, is you can always look back and go, I did that. And it doesn't just exist in the moment. It carries on forward with you, and it's sort of proof of what you're capable of. And that's really important. Can we talk a little bit more about mental health? Is that, because that's sort of one of the main parts of the podcast. Yeah. And I think that's really important. And you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but January was a really hard time, because was that a bit of a breaking point? Was that a bit of a point where things were closing in on you a bit, and you were sort of funneling down a hole a bit and going, where do I go? But what happened, were there other things going on?
There were other things going on. Yeah, of course. Okay. I think that there have been many kind of like moments in this journey where we've just been like not sleeping, or just with our factory, for example, when our factory wasn't creating a quality product, or there were all those QC issues. Like Alex and I were so just like, it was like, we couldn't relax, you know, it's like your livelihood. Absolutely. It's your, horrible. If your manufacturing is not okay, like you don't have a business. So we've, you know, there've been all these times and doing really stressful things, or like pitching to a retailer on like, there's all these little moments of stress and of things that you have to overcome, and emotions, and especially working with your best friends, like figuring out how to like keep that relationship and not jeopardize it, and working together and learning how to disagree in the right way. But I would say January was more for me personally. It wasn't even that the business was like, it was something so big happening. It was just that I was being too much of an introvert. I also live in San Diego, and I don't like, I have a great network of friends, but I'm from the East Coast originally, and my best friends live across the country. So sometimes it's easy for me to just stay in and just work. Mm-hmm. And, I'm also single, like, which is something that is very interesting, being, I was in a relationship for many years and got out of that relationship 2 years ago. And so it's kind of, I actually haven't talked to many people about this publicly, but I'm happy to share. Like, it's so interesting when I'm 32, and like, you know, you're suddenly single after being in a relationship for like 5 years, and you're starting this business and you're self-funding it. You're not taking a salary. And there's so many things like up in the air. It's like, I don't know who my partner is. I have to start dating, which is a whole other, like, just like complete, like, mind F, if you'll excuse my language, you know, it's just like hard. It's a lot of energy that goes into that, emotional energy. And that's tough on top of managing all these other like kind of unknowns in terms of business, finances. So it was learning how to navigate all of that at once, you know, especially. And then I've also, not to like get so like down in the dumps here, but I've also experienced some significant loss within my family. So I know that the holidays at home also kind of trigger a lot of emotions for me. So it was a perfect storm of like working too hard, not resting, throwing all of my self-worth into this business. And then also, you know, grief that is long lasting and comes in, you know, it's just navigating that. And then like the unknowns of my personal life and dating and trying to figure out how to incorporate all of that, you know, it's a lot. I'm still kind of every day is trying to figure out how to do it best. But I think I'm getting better and happier, and I've made some big strides the last 6 months.
Yeah, no, that I completely understand. That is a lot to handle, isn't it? To be fair, you're at a crucial, or a sort of what has been stereotypically a significant point of life, and you're managing a business, and you're, you know, dating and relationships and all that. And it's not like a job, is it? It's not like a 9-to-5 where you just turn up and you can just sort of, you know, oh, I've got to do this today, a couple of hours, that's done. And then they spend the rest of the time messing around, and then you clock off and you're all good. It's not like that at all. It's, you have to bring your life force to this thing, and then you have to put everything you can into it. And, you know, you feel as though it's a reflection of you. And as we talked about earlier, it's your identity, and And I suppose the good side of that is that it's so rewarding. And when this is very, very successful, as it will be, you can look back and go, it was very much worth it. I mean, it's a cliche, you know, no pain, no gain, but it really is. It is high risk, high reward. That is entrepreneurship, isn't it?
For sure.
Ultimately. And you.
Yeah. And I think for entrepreneurs too, like, you know, of course there's the risk and there's like the hardships of doing it. And there's the stress and there's the emotion, you know, everything that goes into it. But for me, what would be worse or harder is like working for somebody else forever and just feeling that cap over me in terms of like my personal career. And that was like, that was soul crushing. That was draining. That was exhausting. I was so tired throughout the days. Like I was like, you know, sitting at my desk, like trying to keep my eyes open. I've always been a really hard worker, but it's just like my heart wasn't there. And so I say that like, I'm happier than I ever have been in my life. You have more things you have to work through. And like, I've been in there and therapy, love, get, find yourself a therapist. Like, honestly, it really helps so much because you don't have to lean so much on your other relationships to help you through hard times. You have somebody that's dedicated to doing that with you. So couldn't recommend enough, but I'm so happy in what I'm doing and I feel so purposeful and I feel so excited and energized every day. And I wouldn't, if I had that security of working at a job, I would feel secure. Maybe, who knows these days, like, I don't know how much job security really brings these days, but I would have kind of that like emptiness of what am I creating? What am I doing that I actually love?
Absolutely. Yeah. Even great advice is even if something's difficult, but it feels like it's the right thing to be doing, just stick at it because there's the difficulty is more surface level, but then deep down is that feeling that you get, that's more important than the surface level difficulty.
And nothing worth doing is easy. Like, I don't know any entrepreneur that's been like, oh, that was easy. It's not easy. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it. But like, even more important than the outcome is really, and this sounds like a cliche too, but it's like who you become through that process. I am so vastly different than the person that I was 2 years ago. Than like,
that was a question. Carry on. How are you different? How have you grown?
Oh my God. In every way, I feel like we learn so much every day, constantly about everything. Like whether it be something like, you know, how to build a website to how to pitch to a buyer to the confidence. Yeah. I think self-confidence has been like a huge thing for me. Like I just being so I naturally, like I've said, I think 3 million times throughout this podcast, I'm very naturally introverted. Like I just, and my friends now, like looking at the person that I was like when I was living in Manhattan, like 10 years ago to where I am now, like, so like I'll talk to everybody. I love networking. I mean, I'm still like, I think the definition of an introvert is you're drained by social activity actually decreases like your energy level. Whereas like for an extrovert, it increases. So I definitely need a lot of my alone time and living alone now is very nice. And it's going to be hard to change that one day if I do find my person, but,
you will do.
But, I feel so much more comfortable like in my skin and with who I am and feeling like I'm on my path. And also like Alex and I, for example, we being best friends working together, we actually, it was her idea, which was brilliant to have kind of like a coach in terms of like, we went through, I don't know, a few months where we really were seeing this coach that was helping us navigate, like how to work together, how to our different personality types, like how best to disagree, how to like bring things to the table to each other. And I think that that has also been super helpful. So that's definitely been a big change too.
Yeah. No, managing a team, especially if you're friends, that must be difficult sometimes. But you must, do you all bring different things to the table? Have you all got different strengths?
Oh, yeah.
I think we spoke about it.
We're all so different. Like I handle like Mark. I mean, I'm a writer, so I do writing, but so does Catherine Ann. So there's certain things we overlap in, but social media, marketing, sales, product development, kind of like a lot of the graphic design stuff falls under me. Alex does like operations, logistics. She shares sales with me. We all like brainstorm with marketing, but she does finance, like things that I could never even, I'm like dyslexic with numbers. I mean, the company would tank in like 2 days if I ever tried to manage anything in terms of numbers. And I could never do what she does. Like solo founders, I have so much respect for because I don't know how one person, I mean, I guess that's why you get help, but it's just I'm so grateful to have them as my co-founders. Catherine Ann is the most hilarious person you'll ever meet. She's absolutely ridiculous and such a personality. She does like all of our creative direction with our photo shoots, with branded content. She does an incredible job of working on partnerships, working with me on social media. She does a lot of our TikToks. Follow us on, well, I'm sure we'll get this to the end, but get to this at the end, but well, TikTok is a fun one to follow us on. So yeah, we all have very, very different skill sets, but they complement each other. And I'm so grateful that I have these, my best friends were so talented. Like, I don't know how I lucked out like that.
What do you do to keep your head straight? What do you do to relax when things are getting tough? How do you detox?
I listen to a lot of podcasts. I listen to How I Built This, which is a great podcast by Guy Raz. And it's just really helpful in hearing other stories of other entrepreneurs. He does an incredible job of focusing on not like how wonderful their successes are, but like how hard their journey was and like what they had to overcome. So I think anything that makes me feel like we're not alone, like other people have gone through this, like no journey is perfect. That's helpful. Mm-hmm. Therapy, couldn't recommend it enough. Super important. I wish I had done it earlier in life, but I was actually very closed off to it until like the last like 4 years. I love yoga and boxing. I think being physically like active, also living in San Diego by the beach, like I'll go for long beach walks where I can like listen to a podcast or take calls from there, just try and get some fresh air by the beach. Our weather's been terrible this year, but I'm excited to be back. I hear that it's getting better. And I think just like I have the best friends in the entire world. So I always say like, if I'm laughing, I'm happy. And maybe that's like kind of a given, but like the best night to me is a night or like the most rejuvenating kind of thing that I can do is just like laugh it off or like, you know, just find something that's funny or laugh with my girlfriends or whatever. Like that is like, that is the best. Like I'd rather that than like a night out, like partying or anything like that. Like I just want to be around people that make me laugh, that make me feel good, that fill your cup.
And you have something that's more important than happiness, which is meaning. Which is what a lot of people are, as much as, you know, meaning and responsibility aren't happiness, but if you've got meaning and responsibilities, that'll get you through a lot of things, I believe. And a worthwhile goal is, you know, I think it's why one of the reasons why people have kids, because, you know, having kids isn't all a happy moment, but it's there are peaks and troughs, as you've spoken about, and, you know, the lows can be low. But the highs can be high, but it's something worthwhile and it's a journey. And that's what we're all on, isn't it? And that's the best thing. And you're helping people, which is another thing. It's not like you're not a merchant banker or, you know, you're doing something that's actually enriching people's lives and you get to experience their feedback and you get to meet them and you'll get stories one day and they'll go, thank you so much. You saved me at this time when I was really struggling and I needed panic panties and it was there and it was, you know, you'll get stories of that. And so, you know, just, I know I can imagine it's hard. I can see in your face that sometimes it can be really hard, but keep going because it's so worth it.
And I think like also I should mention our new, you know, in the grand scheme of like what I want to do in this world, this is of in terms of like me, like we're solving a problem for women 1,000%, but I can't wait until I can use this and like our successes as a resource to do so much more. And I do want to say like our new packaging is carbon neutral. It's going to be plant-based. It funds ocean cleanup. So for every purchase we give back to helping, you know, remove plastics and all these terrible things from the ocean. We've partnered with the Undies Project, which is a nonprofit in the US and it helps. Well, we donate a portion of our underwear to give to, refugees and different people are homeless in the US that could really use, you know, that's just to have, you know, it's things that we don't even take for granted. Like to be able to give them like a decent pair of underwear, yeah, yeah. an amazing pair of underwear when they have like, you know, just yeah. basically nothing, and to make them feel special and loved and thought about. So that's important. And then the whole reason I do this in general is because I want to be able to take care of my family the way that yeah. they've taken care of me, and just give back to the people that I love in my life. So it's never been about like success has never been about like financial, whatever. It's about just having the freedom to live yeah. the kind of life that I want to live, and to know that everybody that I love will be taken care of. And, you know, I grew up with, I won't go too much into this because I know we're tight on time and have to wrap, but I grew up with a brother with special needs who passed away when I was 19. And just seeing, you know, like just, I just want to, seeing the struggles that my parents went through, and I just want to be able to help them like live a really incredible rest of their life. And to anybody else in my family that's like struggling with anything medical or, you know, need resources, or you just be shocked that even a family that's doing like pretty well these days, like there's just, it's just, Absolutely. There's so much more that goes Absolutely. Into it, and so many more expenses. And I just never want my mom to have to go into a nursing home and things like that. Like that, you know, it's just, these are what drive me.
And yeah. from a historical perspective, like a lot of the things that have helped women achieve sort of equality is around like hygiene and like the birth control pill and sanitary, all these things. So you're also contributing to women's lives from that perspective as well. You're taking away another obstacle that some mm-hmm. that women can face. And so that's a incredible, that's just that I thought about that last night. I was thinking yeah. That's a really cool little thing. How you're, you know, changing what could be.
We say change the way women shop for quality underwear. Yeah. It's like, it's making, you know, it's one less thing that we have. There's so much that women have to worry about. And this is one less thing. Like if your period strikes early, if you laugh so hard, you pee a little, if you're feeling a little sweaty down, you know, whatever the case may be, like underwear is a wellness essential for women. And it's really hard to go about your day if you feel like, you know, you have to go commando under a skirt for work, or if you're, you know, there's just so many more reasons. So it's one less thing when women have to worry about, and we feel very passionately about that.
Where do you want Panic Panties to be in 10 years time? Where do you want to be in 10 years time? Not just Panic Panties, because you're not just the business, you're also a person.
And so I'll answer it separately. For Panic Panties, we want it to be like it to be a household name where any woman can go up to their friend and say, hey, do you have a pair of Panic Panties? Like just as they would a chapstick or a tampon, have it be a purse essential, have it be in every airport, you know, rest stop, drugstore, you know, and even beyond. For women to have access to a quality pair in a pinch. We like to liken ourselves to the brand Legs, and Legs brought premium pantyhose to convenient places. So, you know, we're excited to expand our product line. Maybe some sort of like bundles, you know, with like a sexual wellness one, or, you know, there's all these different kind of like themes that could come about. And expanding to just, you know, on the go essentials for women and to make their lives that much easier. So I'm really excited to see that in store, for us to have our little set, you know, a bigger section and for everybody just to know about the brand. And personally, God, I don't know. I mean, I just want to be happy. You know, I just want to feel like
content.
I would love to find a partner and somebody that is appreciative of the business and that's understanding, and that I could really feel like we both, like, you know, complement each other, and, you know, somebody to go through this crazy journey with. I would love that if that happens, if that's in the cards. I would love to hopefully sell the business at some point. I would love to, you know, be able to go on to something bigger, like in terms of nonprofit, or, you know, be able to help other female entrepreneurs to be, you know, give back and help them grow their businesses. I don't know what the timeline is like for that. I don't want to work until I'm 80, but I would like to, you know, grow this to a really great point and then hand it off to another company that could, you know, really do it justice and do things that maybe we couldn't on our own. So we'll see what, I don't know what the timeline is like for that, but I think that I'm just excited to see what's in store. Everybody's always scared about your 30s and it's like, you know, you're getting older, but 30s are the best so far. You just know more about yourself, you feel more confident and more comfortable, and you're just gotta appreciate your own journey.
Do you want to do socials?
We'll do, so find us on Instagram and TikTok. Follow us.
I know you're on TikTok.
Every follower counts. I hate managing Instagram. I can't wait until we can have somebody to help us with that. But it's at panic.panties on Instagram and TikTok. We put out some pretty fire, funny content, if I do say so myself. So I think you'll really enjoy it. Men, women, you know, it's a, our followers are a mixed bag, but they enjoy it. So hopefully you will too. And if you're interested in shopping, we're on panicpanties.com and, you know, on Google. We are only right now shipping to the US and Canada at this point. But for any listeners that are, you know, from either of those two places, you could definitely shop online on our website, and hoping to expand soon.
Yes, definitely. Get over to the UK as soon as possible, because you'll be ready. Because there's nothing that you would be.
I can't wait. It's hard. It is hard to do international. It's expensive and all of that good stuff. But as we grow, it's for sure. Like I can't wait to be, even in my Europe travels. Like there were so many times we were in Budapest and everybody was like, we need these in the, you know, in the clubs here and all of that. And so can't wait. Can't wait to bring it to Europe.
Brilliant. Right, guys, thank you for watching. This has been the Breaking Point Podcast with Maria, and she'll be back another time, definitely, if she wants to. So that's brilliant. All right,
thanks, Ollie. So great to see you.